flown, I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Folks are dumb where I come from. They ain't had any learning. Still they're happy as can be, doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
Folks like us could never fuss with schools and books and learning. Still we've gone from A to Z, doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
You don't have to know how to read or write when you're out with a fella in the pale moonlight. You don't have to look in a book to find what he thinks of the moon and what is on his mind. That comes naturally.
That comes naturally.
My uncle out in Texas can't even write his name. He signs his checks with X's and they cash them just the same. Grandpa Dick was always sick but never saw a doctor. He just died at 93 doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
Cousin Jack insured his shack and now he plays with matches. He'll collect, just wait and see, doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
Uncle Paul heard someone call when he just had two deuces. He wound up with aces three, doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally. You don't have to go to a private school not to turn up your bustle to a stubborn mule. You don't have to have a professor's dome not to go for the honey when the bee's at home.
That comes naturally.
That comes naturally.
A nice young man named Harry is stuck on Sister Flo. She'd like to marry Harry, but his wife won't let him go. If you saw my pa and ma, you'd know they had no learning. Still they raised a family, doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
Doing what comes naturally.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, boy, do we have some wonderful entertainment for you. Gregory Peck was one of the greatest actors that ever acted in Hollywood. Several Academy Awards. Tonight, we're going to have a Gregory Peck bonanza. We're going to listen to two episodes of suspense from the 1940s starring this great man. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now just enjoy the great shows.
Suspense. Gregory Peck as star of The Lonely Road.
Okay, Lieutenant. You can question him now.
Thanks, Doc. Well, hello, Gare. How goes it?
Oh, not bad. You want a statement, I suppose.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, tell me first, is she apt to get the extreme penalty?
Well, that'll depend a lot upon what you have to say.
I see. Well, I'll give it to you straight. I'm counting on you to do your best for her.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, go ahead, shoot.
Okay. The first time I saw Jenny, she was coming along the road carrying a suitcase. I knew she was headed for our place because it's the only house for miles around there. I was trimming the hedge, and I'd got as far as the rear gate when she reached it. I waited for her to speak.
Is this the Gare place?
That's right. What can I do for you?
You had an ad in the paper for a girl to do general housework.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, come along into the house. My wife will want to have a talk with you.
This is a beautiful place you've got here, Mr. Gare. But it's certainly hard to get to.
You've walked from the highway?
Yeah. Must have been almost 5 miles. The sun is something fierce. I almost gave up. Don't any buses run along here?
No, we're pretty isolated. But when there's help in the house, I always manage to give them a lift into town.
That makes it nice, Mr. Gare.
What's your name?
Jenny.
Jenny what?
Jenny will do.
All right, Jenny. In here, please. And Mrs. Gare's a trifle hard of hearing, so you'll have to speak up a bit. Oh, Helen, this is Jenny. She's come in answer to our advertisement.
Oh, yes. I'm very glad to see you, Jenny. Won't you sit down?
She was extraordinarily looking. Not beautiful or pretty. Striking, I guess, would be the word. She had heavy black braids wound about her head. Her eyes were a clear green and looked straight through you. And she was lean and powerful, like a young animal, a leopard or a panther or something. Well, my wife engaged Jenny. That night she cooked an excellent dinner and served it well. She had on a purple skirt and a cerise, I guess you'd call it, blouse, and I could see Helen eye it with disfavor. Every time the girl came close to me, I could feel the strength of her. And those green eyes watched us as if she was sizing us up. We took our coffee and cigarettes out on the veranda after dinner. You can look right over the orange grove to the hills. It's nice.
Steve, what do you think about Jenny?
Oh, well, it's a little early to judge. Seems capable enough. That was a darn good dinner, if you ask me. Maybe we're in luck, darling.
Maybe.
A little more coffee, Helen. Half a cup.
You're probably right. There's a sort of, arrogance, boldness about her that makes me uneasy, as if I'd have something to cope with.
We went up to bed early. I was pretty exhausted every night with all the physical work I had to do. I turned out the light and for some reason stepped over to the window. Jenny's room was downstairs on the same side of the house as ours in the rear. Her light was still on. She was getting ready for bed, and her shadow, huge and black, lay across the lawn. Her arms were raised to take down those heavy braids. There was something actually classic about the thing. The picture of it stayed in my mind long after I'd got into bed. Well, 2 or 3 days went by, and Jenny, well, the thing was, you were conscious of her all the time. Wherever she was, about the house, whatever she was doing, you thought about her. I was working in the garage one afternoon when she came out there with the butcher knife.
Mrs. Gare says you have a whetstone out here. Could I get you to sharpen my knife for me, Mr. Gare?
Of course. Just a moment.
What's that you're doing?
Oh, I'm trying to mend this old bear trap.
Oh, are you a trapper, Mr. Gare?
Oh, no. Hardly. There's a coyote around that's been stealing the chickens. I'm hoping to catch him. There. Now then, let's have the knife.
What do you do, Mr. Gare?
Well, Jenny, Mrs. Gare was a concert pianist at the time of our marriage. I was a manager. Now I take care of her properties. Holdings, investments, you know.
You mean you sign things for her, like checks and papers and things?
Power of attorney, yes, that's part of it.
Pretty soft for you. Huh, Mr. Gare?
Oh, on the contrary, it's quite a job. Keeps me busy.
I still say you've got a pretty setup. And she didn't get such a bad deal herself. She's crazy in love with you. Anybody can see that. Why not? You're good looking, Mr. Gare. And young. You must be at least 12 years younger than she is.
Now, here's your knife, Jenny. Careful now. It's like a razor.
Thanks a lot. That's the way I want it. I can't stand a dull knife. So, I'll probably bother you often.
A few more days went by. I finished my trap and set it out near the chicken run, hoping I'd catch my thief. And one night after dinner, we were in the living room.
Mr.
What's the matter, Helen?
Steve, it's that girl. She was standing there in the dining room door listening.
Jenny? Well, she probably likes music. What's the harm?
Oh, it isn't that. She's always listening and watching. It's beginning to get on my nerves.
How about her work?
Oh, well, she works hard enough. She's willing and clean as a pin, but... Well, I have a feeling she doesn't respect me, that I just don't figure in her scheme of things. She's just simply taken the place over. I don't even run my own house anymore.
Well, fire her, why don't you?
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Say the word and I'll do it for
you.
No,
I don't want you to. Steve, frankly, I'd be afraid to tell her to go. She might get ugly and set fire to the house or something.
Oh, I never heard such nonsense in my life. What ails you, Helen? Aren't you well?
I'm just terribly nervous, Steve. Maybe that's why she takes advantage.
Well, that settled that. I felt like a heel, though, because I was relieved that Helen didn't want to fire Jenny. I was obliged to admit to myself that the girl was getting under my skin. Any little service she had to perform for me, she made very special, standing as close as she dared. I could feel the magnetism of that strong, perfect body. Her hair smelled like new apples, and those clear green eyes would linger caressingly in mine. Then after about 2 weeks, one night, it must have been 1 or 2 o'clock.
Steve. Steve, wake up.
What's the matter?
That girl. I think she's out there in the hallway. I think she's been in this room.
Oh, Helen.
I'm frightened, Steve. Please make a light.
Oh, all right. No one around, Helen. You must have been dreaming, dear.
Oh, perhaps I was. I dream about her often, Steve. Horrid, confused kind of dreams. I'm trying to scream for help and can't. It's just...
Oh, good Lord, Helen. I never thought anybody could get you down. You've got to control yourself somehow. This is just plain silly.
Yes. Yes.
I turned out the light and got back into bed. In a little while, I could hear Helen's even breathing and knew she was asleep. I lay there, thinking about Jenny, of course. I never thought of much else. In a moment, I heard the piano. So faint, I thought I was imagining it. And it came again. Weird. Ghostly. I got up again, put on my robe, and slipped downstairs. The living room was dark except for the moonlight pouring through the window. And Jenny's figure, black against the light, was moving towards me. Almost before I knew it, she'd pressed close against me, crushing her mouth to mine. It was like being stung. Sharp, sweet, terrible. Jenny, what is this?
Don't kid me. You knew this was coming. That it had to come, that nothing could keep us apart. Now everything's going to be all right.
But Jenny, we can't. Helen is no fool.
We can't let her stand in our way.
What do you mean?
It won't be hard. Just a matter of figuring the best way.
I don't know what you mean, Jenny. And we can't stay here talking like this any longer.
It'll be just you and me, Steve. And all that money. Think what we can do with it. Just think.
Are you crazy?
Yeah. Crazy for you. Just like you are for me. Listen, Steve. Inside of 5 or 6 years, you're going to be stuck with a deaf old woman. What you going to do? Sit here and grow old with her? Not you. Sooner or later, you'll clear out. So why not now? With me?
Why? It's not so simple as you make it sound, my dear.
All you have to do is to spread around the town that Helen's going to visit her folks. Mississippi or someplace. And leave her to me. Afterwards, you can say your wife's decided to stay down south. That you're going to sell out and join her. Then we can turn everything into cash and we're on our way. Easy?
The next few days I worked outside till my hands bled and my whole body shrieked with pain. To keep from thinking, I began having nightmares. I'd wake up in a cold sweat and lie there longing for daylight, swearing that as soon as morning came, I'd throw that girl out of the house. But she'd brush against me or touch my hand, and I'd be wild for her again. I guess I knew then that sooner or later, I'd agree to nearly anything she asked. Helen began to get on my nerves. It seemed that every day she looked older, washed out, became deafer. I began to despise her, to want her out of my way, out of Jenny's in my way. One morning at breakfast, Jenny came in and stood there looking at me, fixedly.
Well, Jenny, what is it?
If you're going to town today, Mr. Gare, I've written down some things for the house.
Very well, Jenny. If your list's ready, give it to me. I'll be leaving in a few minutes. I knew what she meant. She was getting impatient. My reply, which she waited for with those green eyes fixed on mine, was virtually a consent to her plan. As for me, I wasn't sure what I meant to do, but I thought it would do no harm at least to set the ball rolling. In town, I dropped into the garage and asked the mechanic to look the car over. I said Mrs. Gare was planning a trip to visit her family in Mississippi, that I'd have to drive her into Tucson to take the train, and that my tires weren't so good. After that, I stopped at the realty office.
Really, Mr. Gare, you're thinking of selling that beautiful place of yours?
Oh, it's just a possibility. I don't want any prospective buyers about the places yet. But my wife is planning a trip south, and I may follow her and remain there permanently. Help such a problem. A place of ours takes a lot of handling. A fellow gets fed up after a while.
Well, there'd be no difficulty disposing of the property, Mr. Gare. Well, just let me know when you're ready, and meanwhile, I won't bother you with people coming.
I drove home in a sort of trance. I wasn't shocked at what I'd done, and the thing was still wide open if I wanted to back out. When I got home, I didn't want to go into the house. So far, I'd had no luck with the coyote, so I busied myself setting the trap in another spot. While I was doing this, Jenny came out with that butcher knife again, and we went into the garage. Helen was at the piano.
Did you do what I told you to, Steve?
Yes.
Good. I can't stand this much longer.
Nor I, Jenny. But I can't bear to be here when...
Kiss me, Steve. Don't worry. It'll be when you're out of the house.
She didn't say any more, just looked at me with a twisted little smile. I gave her the sharpened knife, and she kissed me and went into the house. At dinner that night, Helen said...
I had words with Jenny today, Steve. I can't have her around any longer. You can fire her tonight if you will.
What? Oh, no, my dear. I offered to do it once and you wouldn't let me. Now you'll just have to do it yourself.
Steve, I'm afraid of her terribly.
Why, has she been ugly, threatening?
And don't shout so, Steve. I'm not as deaf as all that. And she'll hear you. No, she hasn't threatened me, nothing like that. There's just something about her that fills me with horror.
Oh, you're imagining things, Helen. What possible reason could she have for harming you?
I don't know, but this house has become a dreadful place. I'm cold all the time, and I'm shaky, and you seem different. You look at me sometimes as if you hate me.
Now, see here,
don't
Helen,
try to reason with me. If she doesn't get out of this house quick, I'll lose my mind. She's like a witch or something malignant or evil.
Jenny came in just then to change the plates for dessert. As she bent over to take the platter, she held that knife in her hand in such a way that my blood ran cool for a minute. After she'd gone out...
You haven't noticed it, but lately I haven't taken a mouthful of food until I've seen you start to eat for fear she'll poison me.
That's ridiculous. Why shouldn't she poison me as well?
Because she's crazy about you.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And you're crazy about her. Don't deny it, Steve. I may be deaf, but I'm not blind, you know.
Look, Helen, I'm going into town for a drive. If you want to fire Jenny while I'm gone, that's all right with me. I tried not to dwell on the immediate events, but to think about the time when I'd be free, to go away with Jenny. The drive into town seemed endless, but at last I pulled up in front of the hotel.
Evening, Mr. Gere. Come for the papers?
Yes, and a cigar, maybe, Fred. I looked around the little lobby. There wasn't a soul in there that I knew. I watched the people. One minute, feeling sorry for them because their lives were so drab. The next, envying them because they were so secure, simple. And I was sitting there, staring unseeingly at the local paper, when I suddenly came out of this trance, or a spell that I'd been under. The shock of realization was frightful. I didn't want anything to happen to Helen. I prayed to heaven I'd get home in time. I kept recalling similar instances of such crimes I'd read in newspapers. I'd always wondered how people could become involved in such things. Well, I knew all about it now. Weak fool to let a coarse creature like that lead me into such a thing. If only I could be in time. I'd throw that girl out and devote the rest of my life to making Helen happy. Helen, generous, loving, intelligent, and talented. Why hadn't I thought of all this before? Then I saw the car. It was parked at the side of the highway right at my turnoff. I knew it was a police car. I cursed to myself and prayed. Don't let them take long. I've got to be in time for Helen. Please. An officer stepped out into the road and waved his flash. Please, I said to myself. Please.
Hello.
What's up, officer?
Oh, looking for a stolen car, but not a baby like that one.
A local car, was it?
Yeah. Hey, you better let me have a look at your operator's card, my friend. You must have been doing about 80 along that stretch.
Oh, sure. Here you are, officer. Sorry I was overdoing it. I was just in town, and I guess I stayed longer than I intended. My wife's alone in the house and not very well, and I was in a hurry to get home.
You live down this road?
That's right.
Say, maybe that car could have got down in there. I think I'll...
No. I would have seen it.
Okay, Mr. Gere. Just take it easy, will you?
Certainly will, officer, and thanks. Good night. I didn't know what to do. I stood there in the doorway, looking up. There was a light upstairs in the window of our bedroom. It threw a radiance on the screen door and burned with a steady glow, as if it had been burning like that for ages. As if it had witnessed a scene of horror and brooded over it, keeping the secret to itself. When I started finally for the house, my legs were so stiff I could scarcely walk. I stayed off the gravel, walking on the grass, and went in the back door. There wasn't a sound. I tiptoed through the kitchen, through the dining room, across the hall. Then I could see the light from that lamp spilling down the stairway at the far end of the dark living room. My heart thumped so loud I could hear it. I wanted to call out, but I didn't dare. Whom would I call? Perhaps everything was all right. Perhaps Helen was up there in bed. How I prayed she was. I hesitated on the threshold, thought of glancing into Jenny's room, but that would have looked queer if nothing had happened. I stepped over the threshold. Ah! It was that trap, that bear trap. Somebody had placed it there, ready for me. Who? He was excruciating. I wrenched and pulled at the thing. Helen! Jenny, somebody! Come and give me a hand! Oh! Who is it? Oh! Help me! Help me, hurry, I'm caught in this trap. Get the hammer, pliers, anything. She reached the bottom of the stairs and snapped on the lights. I've never seen such a sight in my life. There was blood all over the place. On the wallpaper, the white paint. Then I saw Jenny, lying on the floor in a crumpled heap, her long braids soaking in Helen's dress. Her hands and face were spattered with it. Her hair was disheveled, her eyes like pinpoints of fire. And against her side, I could see the gleam of that long, sharp knife. She was coming slowly towards me. Oh, we were beautifully caught, Jenny and I. She with her knife, I with my trap. Helen, don't look like that. What's happened?
You planned this together, you two. But it didn't turn out just as you thought it might.
Helen, you please don't look at me like that.
Well, there she is. Look at her. If I hadn't been ready for her, I'd be lying in her place and you'd be glad, wouldn't you, Steve?
No, no. Helen. Helen, are you insane? Drop that knife, for heaven's sake, and listen to me. She came closer. I made a lunge for her. The grip of that steel about my leg threw me off balance and I fell forward. She sprang on me. I fought her off, but that knife came at me. Face, throat, everywhere like flashes of lightning. Helen, don't do this to me. I swear I came back. Ah! Helen! Don't! No! Well, Lieutenant, that police car arrived in time to save my life. But I wish they'd let her finish the job. Then and there.
Okay, Gare. Okay, thanks. I'll send the doc right in. And, Gare, I wouldn't worry too much about Helen. I think she'll be all right.
Can work for years and years. You're always on the go. You never take a minute off. Too busy making dough. Someday you say you'll have your fun when you're a millionaire. Imagine all the fun you'll have in your old rocking chair. Enjoy yourself. Later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. You're gonna take that ocean trip, no matter come what may. You've got your reservations made, but you just can't get away. Next year for sure you'll see the world, you'll really get around. But how far can you travel when you're 6 feet underground? Your heart of hearts, your dream of dreams, your ravishing brunette. She's left you and she's now become somebody else's pet. Lay down that gun, don't try, my friend, to reach the great beyond. You'll have more fun by reaching for a redhead or a blonde. Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. You You never go to nightclubs and you just don't care to dance. You don't have time for silly things like moonlight and romance. You only think of dollar bills tied neatly in a stack. But when you kiss a dollar bill, it doesn't kiss you back. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Valley 103.1.
Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Gregory Peck in Anton Lieder's production of Hitchhike Poker. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Want a ride, young fella?
Oh, you bet.
How far are you going?
Oh, hi.
Well, hop in. Well,
thanks. That's how I met J. Stewart Belden in his canary yellow convertible. That's how I took the ride. I'll be a long time forgetting. He looked to be about 45, and he wasn't bad looking for a guy that old. He was well built, about my size, no gray in his hair. And that coat he was wearing, boy, I'll bet plenty of camels went under the clippers for that one.
So you're a student, eh?
I graduate from Berkeley this year.
I suppose you're a vet?
Oh, yes, more than half the guys are vets.
What's your name, son?
Ridge Fowler.
Married?
Not me.
Don't tell me you're a woman-hater.
Oh, no, it's not that. It's just, well, I have enough trouble feeding myself.
I said the same thing years ago. Ah, but you'll change your mind when the right girl comes along. 9B1863. Dud.
Huh?
Oh, didn't you ever play license plate poker?
License plate poker? Never heard of it.
It's just like regular poker, except instead of drawing cards, you draw license plates. Now, I drew that hand. There was nothing in it. Next card we see will be your hand. Here comes one now. Watch the license plate. 4J3134. Two pair. Threes and fours. You beat me.
Hey, that's a good game. What are the stakes?
Well, make it easy on yourself. Shall we say $100,000 a hand?
See what I mean? Good Joe. A lot of laughs and small talk. And all the time, that convertible eating the miles up. What a car. We practically flew through Salinas, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Maria.
Well, son, what do you say to a hamburger? I know a little place in Santa Ynez where they make a hamburger that drips with royalty.
Well, you got me sold.
And on the side, French fried onion, shoestring potatoes, and the coldest beer in the world.
Stop, you're killing me.
Now, tell me, did I overrate the place?
Boy, that was terrific.
The trouble is, they give you too much food in there. I've got to quit eating like that. My clothes are getting tight. Especially this coat.
Well, that coat sure is a beauty. I'm nuts about camel's hair.
You are? Say, I've got an idea. Why don't you try it on?
Oh, no, Mr. Belden, I didn't mean
that. Go ahead. You're just enough thinner than I am that it ought to fit you fine.
Well, gosh, I
here, would... go ahead. Try it on. College boy can always use a coat.
Oh. Well, it's a good fit.
It was made for you.
Well, I don't know what to say. That's a coat for a king.
Well, I guess that makes you a monarch then, son. Because it's your coat now.
I couldn't get over it. A coat like that, mine? I'll bet Mom's eyes will really pop when she sees it on me. Must have cost a year's tuition. I climbed back into the car and slouched down into the maroon leather seat, waited for him while he made a phone call. Boy, I felt like a king, all right. I was deep in a daydream when he came out of the phone booth.
Okay, Ridge, here we go.
Hey, look, a straight.
Huh?
I drew a straight. 2J3456.
Really? Straight? That's the highest hand today. That'll be tough to beat.
Darn tough. Well, we drove for quite a while, not talking much. We'd left Highway 101 at Santa Ynez, where we got the hamburgers. There weren't many cars on the road, and Belden hadn't been able to draw anything to beat my straight. In fact, he seemed to lose interest in the game. He was concentrating on the road. It was a treacherous road, curved and high, full of hairpin turns, but he handled the car beautifully, taking those curves fast but sure, never slowing down a bit. Well, I liked speed, but all of a sudden I felt nervous the way he was hugging the edge. I turned to look at him to say something, and the words stuck in my throat. He changed. No more the smiling host. Instead, he was fastened to the wheel like a hawk. That's what he looked like, a hawk, ready to strike. I was tongue-tied at the change in him. I guess my reflexes worked slowly, but his didn't. He threw open his door, twisted the wheel. Hey!
So long, Sonny!
He jumped clear, and when the car hurtled into space, I was alone in it. My head smashed into the windshield. Another jolt threw me against the door. I'm not too clear at this point, but the next thing I knew, I was flying through space again. Only this time, I was free of the car. I landed, sprawled against the side of the hill. I began to slip, to roll. I grabbed wildly, desperately for just anything to stop myself. When it happened, it was the trunk of a twisted, gnarled old tree that grew out of the hillside. Hit me square in the stomach, knocked the wind right out of me. I lay there, too hurt to care. It was a minute or two before I got up enough breath to move. Finally, I edged my way up the cliff, hand over hand. It was brutal, but I was surprised to discover that I hadn't fallen as far as it seemed. I was climbing around a bulge of boulders, not more than 8 feet from roadside level, when I looked up. And there was Belden, a gun in his hand. I ducked and the bullets scaled off the boulders. He wanted me dead, that was for sure. He wanted to kill me. Why? Why? I waited, crouched. Then I heard the horn. I came out from behind the boulders, crawled up on the road. Belden was nowhere in sight. I didn't see what kind of a car it was. I didn't even think to look. All I saw was he'd beat my straight. 4L5555. That was the license. 4L5555. Four of a kind. All of a sudden, I was shaking. I looked at myself. I was beat up, cut, filthy. But what was worse, the camel's hair coat was a mess. King? I had to laugh. Belden was king. I was just the joker. My back hurt, my head throbbed, I ached all over. But I walked every inch of the way back to Santa Ynez. It was dark by the time I got there. When I stood in front of the police station, I realized for the first time the meaning of the word sanctuary. I took a deep breath. I wanted to tell the police as straight a story as possible. I opened the door.
There he is, officer. That's the boy who stole my car, forced me out, took my coat. Just look in the side pocket of the coat. You'll find my wallet.
This couldn't be. What was Belden doing here in the police station? What was he trying to pull? I knew even before I put my hand in the coat that Belden's wallet would be there. And I knew, too, that the police would never believe me, no matter what I said. I was trapped. The desk sergeant was waiting for me to talk, but my throat was dry. My tongue was paralyzed. My brain spinning.
Well, what do you got to say for yourself?
Oh, you don't understand, you see. He gave me the coat. I didn't know about the wallet.
Is that the best you can do?
But I tell you, he picked me up when I was hitchhiking. I was going home from school for the weekend. Then he forced me off the road. He tried to kill me. He shot at me.
Sergeant, let the boy go.
But Mr. Belden...
I've changed my mind. I don't intend to press charges.
But this kid's crazy.
Easy, Sergeant. He's a war veteran.
Oh, I see.
Oh, no. Lock me up, please. Don't believe him.
Everyone is entitled to one mistake. Any boy who is big enough to come into the police station voluntarily, give himself up, deserves another chance.
If I could have erased the memory of his face when he twisted that wheel and screamed, "So long, Sonny." All these benevolent words would have fooled me like they were fooling the desk sergeant. Belden was bursting with sweetness and light. But every word he said to release me only tightened the web tighter. And I knew just as sure as I was standing there that he wasn't through with me. That walking out of that door would be like releasing the clay bird at a trap shoot.
Well, it's up to you, Mr. Belden, if you're sure he won't cause any more trouble.
I'm positive that after tonight, this young man will be no trouble to anyone.
No trouble to anyone after tonight. I had to get away from there. I had to run.
Come here, come back.
I don't know how long I ran. I didn't know where I was. The town was behind me. I stopped. Out of breath. I tried to light a cigarette. My hands shook like I had the palsy. It was like the South Pacific. Snipers and trees. But what trees? Where? Then I saw the bright, glaring neon ahead. Mackinals, one sign said. And Wayside Rest, Trucks Welcome, the other. Just a dinky service station and a lunch wagon. But it was an oasis to me.
Howdy. Hey, what's the matter, bud? You sick?
No, I'm all right.
You sure look green around the gills. Been in a fight?
How soon will the truck start coming through?
You got a long wait, about 2-3 hours. Been in an accident?
Look, mister, I've got to get a ride to Ojai. Do you mind if I hang around and wait?
No, I don't mind. Won't do no good, though. Ain't allowed to pick up riders, company rules. Might be lucky and catch a wildcatter, but I doubt it.
Oh, thanks.
You sure you're all right? Maybe you better go next door and get yourself a cup of coffee. Sure look like you could use one.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Hey, if a ride turns up, I'll call you.
Thanks, Mac.
Oh, I'm not Mac. I'm Al. Mac works days.
Well, I felt halfway decent when I came out of the lunch wagon. I'd cleaned myself up and reduced my capital to 15 cents. Al had a customer.
Gas and oil, that'll be $2.80. Hey, bud, come here.
Huh?
I got you a ride to Ojai.
Oh, you have? Who with?
The little lady here. She's been driving all day, got an awful headache. She's going straight to Ojai. Here's the fellow I was telling you about, lady, that needed a ride to Ojai.
Oh, I'm afraid you misunderstood. I just said I wished I had somebody to drive me.
Oh, well, I don't blame you for not wanting to take a rider, but I'd appreciate it if you'd change your mind. I've got to get to Ojai tonight.
Well, I am tired.
Oh, go ahead, miss. He's a nice fellow.
Well, if you'll vouch for
me. Now, wait a minute, lady. I don't vouch for anybody.
All right. I guess it'll be all right.
It was a pleasure to drive for her. She didn't say much, and I didn't feel like talking. She just sat there beside me, her eyes closed, resting. Once in a while, I snatched a quick look at her. She had long, dark eyelashes resting on her marble-like cheeks, hands folded in her lap. I found myself remembering when the right girl comes along. I was trying to remember who said it when I saw her looking at me. Feel better?
Much better. I'm ashamed of myself hesitating to let you drive my car. I'm afraid I'm overcautious.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Can't be too careful.
One reads of such awful things happening on the road.
Yeah. Awful things. I hadn't thought of Belden since we left Al's gas station. Now he was back in the front of my mind.
You're going awfully fast. These curves are treacherous.
I guess I'm just anxious to get home.
Oh, yes, but look out! Do you want to kill us both? You almost sideswiped
him. Oh, I'm sorry, I...
What are you honking now for? He's gone.
Your horn.
What about it?
Oh, nothing. I thought I'd heard it before.
Before? Look, maybe I'd better drive.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'll be all right. I'm sorry. I'd be sewing up my sleeves if I didn't get a hold of myself. I must have been crazy, thinking that her horn was the same as the one that had honked for Belden when I was hanging on the side of that hill. It was just a horn. A lot of horns sound alike. I tried to steady myself. I didn't want her to catch on how rattled I was. I turned to her to apologize. She was putting a cigarette in her mouth, but it was purely automatic. She was sitting up straight, tense. Her eyes were glued to the road ahead. Then it hit me. I'd been over this road earlier tonight with Belden. Suddenly, it loomed up, that wide bank curve just ahead, the spot where Belden had tried to kill me. My hands froze on the wheel. I held my breath, and then I saw her hand reach out. What are you doing?
Let go of my wrist. What's wrong with you? I was only reaching for the cigarette lighter on the dashboard.
Oh. I'm sorry. That curve back there, it...
Pull over and stop.
Huh?
Pull over. I'm going to drive.
She drove about a mile, I guess. Neither one of us said anything. Then, without any warning, she took a sharp turn off the highway and down a rutted dirt road. Hey, miss, you're leaving the highway.
We better stop a while. You don't look so well.
Oh, I'm all right now.
You don't look it. Better have a drink. I'll reach in the glove compartment to find some scotch.
Oh, no, really, I'm all right.
Well, then maybe I need it.
Maybe it was the drink. Maybe it was the girl. Maybe it was just relief. But I felt peace for the first time that night. I watched her inhale. The glow from the cigarette lit up her high cheekbones. I couldn't see her eyes until she turned her head.
What's your name?
Ridge.
Mine's Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
You must think I'm pretty much of a jerk the way I've been acting.
It's all right. Things like that happen to everybody.
Yeah, I guess so. Look, I'm all right now. I could drive.
What's your hurry?
Well, I thought...
What's the matter? Don't you like to sit here with me?
Well, no, it's just... I thought you were in a hurry.
I'm not now. Are you?
No. No, I'm in no hurry at all. She didn't seem to be moving. It was so gradual. I caught a trace of warm perfume in her hair. She smiled at me, one of those elusive smiles, half innocent, half... Her head touched my shoulder. I accepted the invitation.
I like you, Ridge. I like you a lot.
Yeah. You know, tonight back in the filling station, when I first saw you, I...
What's the matter, Ridge?
The miniature license tag on your key ring.
Yes?
4L5555.
Four of a kind.
Four of a... You play license plate poker?
I'm afraid so, Ridge.
Four fives. It's the license of the car that picked Belden up after he tried to kill me.
That's right.
Then you're in it with...
With me, Sonny!
I fell right out of the car. Hard. My face buried in the dirt. I didn't black out, but it would have been much easier if I had. Only my mind functioned. Everything else seemed paralyzed.
Well, you took your time getting here.
I was delayed.
You were supposed to be here waiting. What if I hadn't been able to keep him?
Oh, I knew I could depend on you, darling, to detain him.
What is that supposed to mean?
Did you have to go as far as you did? Did you have to let him kiss you?
Do you know a better way to keep a man on ice?
A perfect wife, a little helpmate.
Oh, shut up. Put him in the back seat.
Now, just a moment, darling. I'm going to do it right this time. There'll be no slip-ups.
You fool! Put that gun away!
Why?
Don't you realize if a bullet is found in the body, it won't be accidental death?
You're all always so right, aren't you, darling?
Only because you're so stupid.
Stupid, am I? Who planned this whole thing?
You did, and badly. If you'd handled it right in the first place, his body would be burned up by now, along with the car. Now put him in the back.
Belden's wife. But what? Why do they want to kill me? Why? Belden picked me up. Threw me in the back of the car.
Uh-huh. Hand me the wrench, Virginia.
Stuart!
This time, warm, black oblivion rushed over me. After a second, the pain was gone. And so was I. Consciousness returned in splotches.
Oh, we've plenty.
My head was like a shortwave receiver, now static, now clear, now clear, now static, now.
Anything behind us?
Nobody.
We're almost there.
Are you sure no one has discovered the car yet?
Of course not. The way it's lying, nobody will see it until daylight. And then J. Stuart Belden will be found dead, burned to an unrecognizable crisp. We can shake this place, go to South America.
You can go. I have to stick around, remember, to collect the insurance and pretend I'm heartbroken you're dead.
Will that be so hard? You didn't talk like this when you married me. But of course there was a lot more money then.
Yes, swindled from suckers.
Since when have you become fussy about where money comes from? What's changed you? The schoolboy?
Don't be a fool.
All right, we've got to work fast. Give me a hand with him.
Wait.
Huh?
Here comes a car.
The end of the line. But anyway, now I knew why. I was a stand-in for a corpse.
Do you have your wallet?
I'll put it in this pocket as soon as I get him out of the car. All clear?
Yes.
This was it. They were on either side of me. I had to think straight. My body still felt numb. One chance. If only my muscles coordinated, I'd wait till he dragged me out of the car and then I'd fight.
Virginia, get the gasoline can out.
I felt him grab me under the armpits. I opened my eyes just in time to see that murderous wrench in the girl's hand. As she brought it down, my eyes closed.
Oh.
Hit me hard, but it wasn't the wrench, it was Belden. The wrench had folded him up and he collapsed on top of me. Every nerve in my body was alert now. I didn't know what would come next, but I was ready for it. She pulled Belden's body off me. She wasn't aware of me watching her. She was too busy dragging Belden over to the rim of the cliff. She was transfigured with hate.
Well, Stuart, it's how you planned it. Accidental death!
And then she kicked him, and he disappeared over the edge. I didn't wait to see any more. I crawled out of that car, and I started to run right down the middle of the road. She saw me.
Wait! Stop! Wait, Ridge!
But I kept right on going. I glanced back. She started the car. She was coming right at me. First, I thought she was just trying to catch up to me. Then I realized she was trying to run me down. She was trying to kill me. I was crossing to the left side of the road. She was right behind me. It was just a question of seconds, and suddenly, around the bend, a big truck. I was sandwiched between them. I stood, stunned with horror. Her scream ringing through my head. And the picture of her in the car, swerving off into space into the canyon below.
Hey, Bert, you all right?
Yeah.
What happened?
She went off the road.
A crazy woman driver. We'll have to report it. Come on, I'll give you a ride into town. Do you hear me? Don't you want a ride?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
What are you staring at?
Your license plate. CM1111.
Hey, it wasn't my fault. You saw how it happened.
Four aces. Four aces. I'd won. I'd taken the last hand. But as long as I live, I'll jump out of my skin whenever a car pulls up and a voice asks,
"Want a ride, young fella?"
If you ever go across the sea to Ireland, then maybe at the closing of your day, you will sit and watch the moon rise over Cleta and see the sun go down on Galway Bay. And if there's gonna be a life hereafter, and somehow I'm sure there's gonna be, I will ask my God to let me make my heaven in that dear land across the Irish Sea.
And ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.